This is the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast, and I'm your hostess, Natalie Ross. I want to send a huge thank you and shout out to the latest Patreon supporters. Thank you all so much, because you know what? Your support actually produces this show. It costs money to produce a show, and your money is what helps make it happen. So everybody listening, send a huge thank you and gratitude from your heart to the latest supporters: Ashley Mello, Ree Hart, Mindy Stock, Diane Tyrell, Lindsay Mellon, Emily L., Kristen Lagos, and Jen Finoff. Thank you all so much. And I want to say a thank you to the people who have left iTunes reviews lately. Thank you, Kaya Shannon, and thank you, Yoga Witch 333. I'm going to read Yoga Witch's review here. She says, "Natalie, I've been with you since day one. This podcast has shifted so much in my life and in my thoughts. There's so much information and diversity in topics. You are such a beautiful spirit for taking on this task of providing guidance. I'm sure it's not always easy, but you know your path and you're following it. This podcast is exactly what the world and the work needs right now. A guide to connect with spirit, nature, and each other. I will always support you, tell people about you, and will always be grateful for your work. I hope to one day be a guest, and until then, I'll keep listening on my hour commute. So much love, my darling, and I'm so proud of you." Dang, thank you. This is the first time I read it. I just read it on the spot here because I thought that would be fun, and my heart is melting. Thank you, and it's just awesome to read these reviews. If you want to leave a review in iTunes, I'll definitely check it out. Maybe I'll even read it on air, like I just read this one. And this week's guest is Bakara Wintner, who is a fellow Durham, North Carolina resident. And we are celebrating this week that this goes live with the launch of her book, WTF is Tarot and How Do I Do It? So I went over to her apartment and we recorded this conversation for you all. And yes, we do cuss in it because the name of the book has a cuss word in it. So if you have kids' ears that you want to protect from that kind of thing, then I would recommend hitting pause and playing at another time. Hey everybody, I want to take a quick break and chat with Laura Lee about some healing work she did with Rebecca Conran, who has been a guest on the show in episodes 38 and episode 78, and who also does our energy reports. And so I just wanted to check in with Laura Lee real quick and ask her a couple questions about her experiences working with Rebecca. Hi, Laura Lee.
Hi, Natalie.
So what prompted you to seek help from Rebecca? What were you thinking and feeling?
Well, originally I was feeling depleted from working with many clients as a body worker and energy healer myself, and reached out to Rebecca for support, to support me in my own healing and also to support me in how I was supporting others. And yeah. I think we all have blind spots, no matter who it is. And it's very important as a practitioner to receive regular, ongoing work from others.
Right. Yeah. How are you going to be able to give your best work if you're not getting the support you need to be clear and whole and aligned and just have your cup full?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what was your experience like working with Rebecca? How does it feel to actually be there with her? Or actually, do you do it in person or do you Skype?
Well, I have worked with Rebecca in person, but I've also worked with her perhaps more so remotely on the phone. And I find it to be equally as powerful and no different than in person. Rebecca really is incredibly kind and compassionate, and her energy work is very, very strong. She's incredibly intuitive, one of the most intuitive healers that I know. And so I feel that that really helps me to be able to cut through the noise to what is most important in that moment in the session. Rebecca's also extremely committed to her own healing journey and hasn't been afraid to share that with me or with others. And I really respect that about her.
Yeah. And I love that it's no different in person or on Skype. And you're someone who's had both experiences, so you can speak to that really well. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like sometimes people have this idea that if it's not in person, it's not as powerful. And I just simply don't think that's true. That hasn't been my experience at all.
Same here.
Yeah.
Skype is awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Or phone, whatever.
Yeah.
And so what kind of experiences or transformations has your supporting healing work from Rebecca helped you to have in your life?
Well, it's helped me with my energy levels, and it's helped me refine my practice further, both my personal spiritual practice and the practices that I do for myself every day, but also the practices of how I'm working with others. Like maybe I'm working a little bit differently with people, doing certain things before and after the sessions. It's helped me in being able to just hold more energy and work, do it more and more energy work with people, because I've been in a transition of moving away from body work and doing more energy healing work. And so she's really been helping me with that transition, which I appreciate so much.
That sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Laura Lee, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you very much, Natalie.
And for listeners, if you are curious about learning more about Rebecca, you can listen to episode 38, episode 78, or to any of our energy reports, as Rebecca does our monthly astro energy reports on Dream, Freedom, Beauty. And you can also check out Rebecca and the services that she offers at RebeccaConran.com and on Instagram at RebeccaConran. Welcome back to the show, Bakara.
Thank you.
So last time we had you on the show was when we had just launched and when you had just essentially launched your huge baby, Everyday Magic, in Durham, North Carolina, which is a store for people who are listening who aren't familiar with it. And I want to know how that's going, but I also want to just announce that you have a new book that's your now, I guess, second baby.
Yes.
Besides all of your, like, thousands of crystal babies and your dog baby and everything.
I'm a mother of many at this point.
So you want to give us an update on, like, you know, it's been, what, a year and a half since we talked on the show? And you want to tell listeners what's up with Everyday Magic?
Yeah, definitely. Everyday Magic is doing great right now. I'm definitely standing, you know, a year and a half out and looking back and feeling a lot of love for the process and the product, at least in the stage that it is in now. But opening it was crazy. I was completely ill-prepared and not really knowing what it would take to open a business and what it would entail. So a lot of it is all the things I love doing, like going to Tucson and Denver and going on huge crystal buying trips and interacting with customers and all that. And a lot of it is stamping bags. And a lot of it is, you know, reordering receipt paper. And we're such a small operation that at the beginning, it kind of just felt like this unending project where there was like, you know, if you spend a lot of time on something, then it's like done, you know, there's some kind of like finished product. But even if there is, and it's true now still, if I spend like a week straight doing nothing but working on stuff for EM, it's still not done. So I think it taught me how to be comfortable with the idea of things not being perfect all the time and things being open-ended. Definitely less of a micromanager than I was a year and a half ago, as my colleagues can probably attest to. But more than that, there's just so much magic that's been created as a result of that space. Like when we opened, it was just me and my best friend Madison in that space. And immediately after, we got Megan, who's the owner of the Zen Succulent, who rents out the back. And then a few months after that, Rochelle, who is an herbalist, she owns Empress Herbs, set up a bar inside of our space. And it just feels like I couldn't have imagined it better. I couldn't have even fathomed a year and a half ago that it would look like what it looks like now.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that, because I feel like that represents how you really just have to kind of take the next step and just keep going. You can't, so many times I feel like people want to know the finished product, the final picture, what's the big win or outcome, but you just got to go.
Totally. And I think that it speaks to the fluidity and success of running a business in a way that is feminine rather than masculine. I was told by so many people that, you know, I needed a lot of things before I began. I needed a lot of, you know, plans and projections and all of that. And I didn't do it because I don't know how. And I also didn't want to. So I went without it. And I think that most of my decisions were based on my gut or my intuition or my feeling about something. And hey, that works too. Like for business, that works too. It works in a different way. But I think that a lot of my friends and a lot of my clients kind of try to force themselves to work in a masculine way because the workforce is structured in such an inherently masculine way. And it doesn't work if that's not the way that you are like best at working. So it's definitely taught me I feel like people tell me what they want to do. And no matter how far-fetched it is, I'm just like, you can probably do it. Like you can probably just do whatever you want to do. It's just a matter of having the balls and the heart and the guts.
And the non-attachment to the outcome.
Yeah.
It's like being present for the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because people want to do all those masculine things because they're like, this will maybe guarantee that it's successful and quote, good.
Right.
I feel like that's kind of the program. I know that's the programming of where I come from falling
absolutely
into that trap.
Mm-hmm. But guarantees are always an illusion no matter what. So I think especially when you're opening your own business to, you know, look for some kind of promise that it's going to work. I mean, best case scenario, it does and you feel right. And worst case scenario, it doesn't and you feel betrayed. But either way, it's the same.
Yeah, definitely. I want to put a disclaimer in here to people listening because, Vikar, you are like, I don't know how you, I mean, you don't sleep. Well, you do sleep a little bit, but like you get so much done. I want to just make sure people realize that just because you're making intuitive decisions doesn't mean you're sitting around like manifesting from your couch waiting for the thing to come
right
up to you. You're out there getting it. What does that look like in that feminine respect?
Okay. So, I mean, it definitely looks like constantly working. So there's not, you know, for me, I don't work for someone else. I don't have a 9-to-5. So no one really tells me when I'm working or when I'm done working. So it's, you know, deciding, like this weekend I was traveling with some friends and the emails just piled up and I just let them. I'm like, I know that, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I will sit down and deal with everything. But just like having those days where I wake up, I'm like, I definitely have 3 days worth of things to do in one day. And I think that being really excited about all of them helps. I think the satisfaction I feel of getting it done helps. It's also going to gem shows and trade shows and buying crystals and new products for the store. And, you know, which is funny because crystals are maybe they're feminine, but the gem shows are all men. It's just all men.
Whoa,
set up in tents.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's all because it's like the distributors and the miners and
wow,
things like that. So being like a little, you know, 5'1" whippersnapper going up and playing hardball with these guys. And also, you know, being able to say no to people who know more than I do or are more established than I am, and making decisions that ultimately feel aligned with my integrity and the vision that I have for EM. It looks like, you know, delegating to other people and trusting other people to kind of take over when it's something that I'm not good at or I don't want to do. But also, you know, having the sense of what can I do that no one else can do, because ultimately it was my own vision. And like, if I give too much of those kind of core things away, then it doesn't look like that anymore. But truly, it was all trial and error. It was all like giving too much away. It was hiring a business consultant and spending thousands of dollars on that ultimately was useless and I didn't need. So I feel like, you know, the process of trusting myself and the way that I work and in my femininity and my business was ultimately as a result of not trusting myself first and then being like, I could have just done that better and for free myself.
Oh, I so feel you. But it's so important too to figure out what you can delegate, because those little tasks, like someone could sort through things so you don't have to spend an hour sorting through or something.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, there was the line. What do you have to do?
I'm also just so ridiculously, ridiculously lucky to be working with the women that I'm working with. So Madison has been my best friend since college, and being best friends with someone or loving someone dearly does not inherently translate to working well with them at all. Like, in fact, in most of my experiences, it's been the opposite. But with Mads, like, we're just on some, like, mind meld, like psychic stuff where it's like, I feel like we'll like, you know, spend, you know, an entire day just working together and like, we don't even really need to speak to each other. We've just kind of learned the language of our energies. And then Rochelle has come in and just like knows how to do pretty much everything that Madison and I know how to do. And there's no, I mean, it's such a small operation and there's no slackers. No one thinks they're above, you know, anything. We're all taking out the trash. We're all sweeping. We're all wiping things down. So I think the kind of like genuine excitement and passion of a bunch of people who just want to be there doing what they're doing has kept it afloat way more than my specific work style or my individual vision.
But you kind of summoned that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I was actually talking to Madison about it yesterday because I got back. I've been gone for a few weeks and came back and everyone came in to just like help unpack and hang out. And I'm like, I just feel like the luckiest person in the world. And she's like, well, you kind of manifested this. I'm like, how funny that like I manifested it, but I feel like the luckiest one like inside of all of it. But it is, it's a delicate thing to hold leadership and to, you know, not be apologetic for it, but to also know what's because of you and what is because of the people that you've brought in.
That's your second book.
Yeah. Oh God, no more books.
I don't want to read another book.
Oh my gosh. I love that. And so something else is like, you know, you set up this space every day. I'll never forget when I first found it. And I found it because I had like missed a turn in downtown Durham, which has all these one-way streets. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of doing a like circle around of the block to get back to the street I needed to be on. And bam, there was the corner where you're at. What is it? Parish Street.
Yeah, Parish and Church.
And I was like, what is that? Like, really? Someone's opening a magic store for, like, witches in downtown Durham? What the fuck? I cannot wait. Who are these people? I love them already. So I know it was a deeply shocking and, like, validating thing for me to see that. And I'm wondering what your experience has been. Just being able to like even just sit in your store and see the community come in, like what kind of transformations or what have you observed in the way this has kind of rippled through Durham?
Well, there's definitely more witches in Durham than I thought. So one of the things that I was supposed to do but didn't do before opening the store is obviously market research, engaging interest and seeing you know, what similar businesses are around. And I just did, I did a really casual sweep of that, but I also, the first time I visited Durham, I had this visceral feeling of just wanting to be here. And I think I just trusted that maybe a little bit blindly and maybe a little bit too much of like, if I feel this so strongly, if this feels like home that much, then everything that I am is just going to be supported here in some way. And so the vision of opening Everyday Magic came with Durham because I never would have been able to open it in New York. I mean, rent itself would be more than I make in a year, like in a month. So,
oh my gosh.
I think that, you know, I found the space and the space felt right. I found the city and the city felt right. So I opened it and it was just like so much better than I ever could have imagined right away. And so some of it was, you know, people who were already magically inclined or spiritually inclined. And then more than that, it's a lot of people who walked in and are like, what the heck is this place? Like, you know, what are these? Like, what do crystals do? You know, what are these cards? And seeing people who didn't even know that they had an interest in objects like this kind of cultivate a meaningful relationship with them over time. And, you know, there's girls that, there's just two girls that come in pretty much like every weekend and, you know, maybe they get something, maybe they don't, but just like seeing their faces every weekend. There's definitely the hashtag EM girl gang that has formed and it's a very unlikely cast of characters. It's a combination of, you know, business owners and 9-to-5ers and witches and mystics and people whose kids really like the crystals and just more than, I think that's the thing that is so specifically satisfying to me about opening a shop like this in Durham is New York has this already. Like it has like the built-in community. It has a very specific crowd that's going to go to shops like this. And I think, you know, seeing a, you know, a 65-year-old man come in and fall in love with crystals and leave with one is the best. Like, that will make my week.
That's very cool. I remember I was in the shop one day and this man came in. You came over and told us about it afterwards because it was so funny. Mm-hmm. And he was like, do y'all sell like devil worshiping stuff in here? And he was asking you all these questions. And then, and you're like, I don't even know what your response was. But then he went and he bought a bunch of like sage and stuff. And like, yeah. You know, he was in here trying to like grill you and like catch you and did the devil worship.
Yeah.
And he bought was a like customer.
He bought straight up hoodoo anointing oils. And I explained to him what they were just so he wasn't going home with objects that he didn't understand. But yeah, it's definitely like a funny moment when people, you know, walk in. It's like, do you carry playthings of the devil? And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I'm like, is it? I guess it's like how you use it. There was definitely one guy. There was someone outside of Everyday Magic. I was out of town, but Rochelle sent me a video, and he was videoing inside the store talking about how awful everything was and how like the devil lives in that store. And Rochelle sent it to me. I'm like, you know, I'm pretty sure the devil lives like down the street at the McDonald's and the check cashing place. But, you know, people can feel whichever way they want. I have no time left. I have no time left for that.
No,
I'm too busy.
Yeah.
Totally. I just can't. There's not enough time in the day for me to consider that and do everything I need to do every day.
Yeah. So one thing I love is, you know, Durham is a super diverse place and mm-hmm. we get put on the map because of events, you know, like recently they tore down the statue and it was all over the place. And so I know, you know, just from being in the store, I'll see people of all kinds in there. I'll see like Black people, white people, Hispanic people, Asian people, like every kind of mm-hmm. person, every kind of gender. It's just like this, I love seeing that mix up and it's not just the stereotypical white girl in there.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely were mindful from the beginning of what the community is in Durham and like the roots of magic in the different cultures that exist in Durham. And also kind of trying to make it universally accessible to anyone who comes in. So there's this one woman who comes in with her husband and her two kids. And they do not speak a lick of English. They only speak Spanish, and their kids are the most well-behaved little boys that have ever come into the store. They just sit in the two chairs quietly, and they leave with something every time. And so now I like see them coming in, and I'll like cue up my translator and, you know, do the best I can with my broken Spanish and always give their kids a couple of crystals. I feel like it just shows me that, you know, this store isn't like, it's not about like me. It's not about what I look like. It's not about where I come from. Like these objects can speak for themselves and they can, you know, transcend language and cultures and all of that. It's just what people find personally resonant. Mm. So that is a relief for me that I'm not just serving myself and my own demographic and having this business. Cause that would be a bummer.
And I think you've fostered a space that kind of allows that too. I've seen some other shops that are just like, no kids, no one under 18, mm-hmm. and like really strict, weird stuff with like no stealing signs all over the place. I'm like, okay, y'all sound really tight and like you're in some lack mentality. Just chill out. I don't know what your story is, but come on. So I like it. It just feels like open and welcoming, at least for me. I'm sure everyone has had different experiences.
Yeah.
But in different places, and everyone will have places they love and places they don't feel welcome. But, you know, I'm just saying, I appreciate it.
Yeah. I don't know how it's happened. We have so many like delicate little breakable things everywhere. And like, but we have like, we've had like 10 dogs in the store at one time. We've had like kids running around. Like someone will come, like someone will lease their dog outside and come in and we'll be like, please bring your dog in. Like we just, I need to squish it. It's really important. So I think staying out of the lack mentality in general is just so essential. I just assume that people don't steal. It's not that they don't, but I just assume that they don't. Mm-hmm. And everything that the business gains goes back into it, into its employees. It's just not worth it. Like, it's so easy to make an environment miserable. and I think generosity like energetic generosity in any other kind is such a delicate thing that I feel more protective of that than anything else. Like I would rather there be a small amount of theft at the store every month than me having to put up signs being like, you know, karma's only a bitch if you are, like, don't steal. Like, people already know this. I'm not going to tell them anything I don't already. If someone comes in with the intent to steal, a sign on the door isn't going to change that. It's just going to change the energy of how people feel walking in after seeing that sign.
Hashtag, this is not an invitation to steal.
Yeah. Please don't. For the love of God, it's like... just barely getting by as it is.
But that, you know, not being, having to like stick up your ass about it is really refreshing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's part of the perfectionism that's gotten dulled over time, which I think is a good thing. It's made space for my humanity.
Oh, yeah. Humanity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's that thing.
So your book. Let's talk about your book.
Yeah.
The fuck is tarot?
That's WTF my shortened
version.
The fuck.
That's so funny. So what WTF is tarot and how do I do it? Does WTF stand for anything else or does it stand for what the fuck?
It's what the fuck.
Okay, yeah. What the fuck is tarot and how do I do it? I love it. I love that it's just like, hey, all you people who are like, the fuck, here it is. So, I mean, I'm sure there's like, a million things that inspired this book to come about, but was there one impetus or moment that was like, I'm doing it? One thing that like said yes.
Yeah, it was literally a publisher approaching me and asking me to do it. So it was, I think the store had been open for 3 months. I was newly single out of a serious relationship. I was homeless, largely just couch surfing at friends' places. I was completely overwhelmed with EM and kind of just treading water, trying to like waiting for things to settle. And of course, right in the thick of that, I got an email from the people who are now my publishers. It's called Page Street Publishing. It's a small publisher in Salem, Massachusetts, actually.
Cool.
And they were like, we want you to write a book on the tarot. We like your voice. Do you think that you can have it done in 6 months? And I'm just like, I have literally no earthly idea if I can have it done in 6 months, but it just felt like, I knew that I wanted to do it at some point. And I knew that I had a lot to say about it. And of course the feeling of like, well, I'll have more to say about it a year from now than I will right now. Plagued me. But
like,
I also,
wait, was that like, I don't know enough or what's that?
It was like, I've been reading tarot for 3 years. Like who the fuck am I to like write a, and that's actually like the first part of the first like intro to the book is who the fuck am I and who the fuck are you? Which is just like, you know, I've been reading tarot at this point for, you know, 4 years, which is still like, you know, I think the questions of worth and legitimacy and, you know, who really fucking cares about what I have to say about this was there. But I also had been reading for long enough and had a big enough client base and felt comfortable enough in my relationship with the tarot to know that, you know, there are a lot of books that will go more in depth in, you know, different aspects. But the first time I was given a deck, the first thing I said was, what the fuck is this? Like, and just like needed it broken down really simple. So I accepted, obviously, and 2016 was the worst year of all time.
Because you had to write the book?
I think the act of, like, so half of the year was just consumed by this deadline. So it was two things that were both new that were long, winding, unending projects. So it was the store, which was this unending project, and it was the book, which was this unending project. And so I felt like...
plus a big dose of uncertainty.
And, you know, not having a home, which is like, I'm not okay if I don't have my own space. So it was definitely the most challenging year of my life. And I felt like I couldn't give everything that I had to give to the store because I was spread so thin in other areas also. Ultimately... I've like reread this book now and looked at it with some space and I love it. And I think that she is everything that I could have done. and I'm really proud of it, and I feel good about, you know, where the store is now. But while it was happening, I was barely human.
It sounds to me, you know, I have a master's, and so I remember writing my thesis, and, you know, for people with PhDs, it's this similar, like, so this is like your little master's or PhD baby.
Definitely. You
know? This is your thesis. This is your everything. You're like...
It definitely swallowed me whole, which is it's a space that I actually really love being in, where you're just so immersed in something that you don't even think about anything else. I'm sure I was miserable to be around the last couple months because you didn't even have to ask me like how it was going. I would just start talking about it because I was like making notes in my head.
Processing. Yeah. Out loud.
Like anytime I wasn't at my laptop writing, like as I was peeing, I was like texting notes to myself to write down.
Yes.
Just could not quit. And then it was due December 31st. So I think the last 2 days of writing it, I didn't even like get up to eat. Like I remember going to the deli down the street being like, this is the first time I've eaten in 2 days. So do not recommend that. But looking back now, it's hard not to picture myself in some kind of like shimmery, you know, womb bubble while I was writing it, because it was it was hard, and it was time consuming, and it was demanding. But I never once was like, what am I going to say? What am I going to say about this? Like I knew what I had to say. It was just a matter of getting it out in the way that sounded, the way it felt. For me.
Ugh, that's big. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you're like channeling it and adding, it's like, you know, it's like higher self Bakara, human self Bakara, divine tarot, all these. Were there any, do you work with spirit guides?
Yes.
So were there any ones in particular that you feel really helped you? And you don't have to identify who they are, but did you like work with your guides to help bring this book into form?
I definitely did. There's a couple different energies that I worked with. I actually worked with a lot of energies that I had never met before.
Did they show up or did you invite them?
They showed up.
Okay.
While I was writing it. Cool. And it was just, it felt like elders and masters of the tarot. So there were times where I would write something and I would go back and read it and be like, that is so fucking good. Like, I've never even thought about that before. Like, how did this just end up on the page? So I definitely felt visitations, just from whatever portal was being created in the act of writing it. And also I have a guide that's a little girl and she's really playful. And I think that came in at some points where, you know, because the book is humorous. I hope. I think it is sometimes. And I also have a guide that's like strictly just for organization. And every time I see him, he's like sitting at a desk, like with a typewriter. And so I definitely felt that. I felt like, you know, to some of my like departed loved ones at times, because my mom was a writer. So the act of writing this book was kind of a powerful act of manifestation that felt connected to her. It was also my dream once upon a time to be like a published author. And that,
you worked at a publishing company, right?
Yeah, I worked at a literary agency.
Oh, literary. Okay.
So it was like kind of a funny nod to, you know, college Bakara whose only dream was to publish a book. Never in a million years did I think it would be this about the tarot, but it feels like a lot has come full circle, and it feels poignant that the deadline was December 31st, like the end of 2016, which was the worst year ever, and 2017 has been lit.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that's funny. So it'll be 9 months and 10 days or something since you submitted it, that it'll be essentially birthed to the world.
Yes.
So it's had quite a gestation.
Yeah, it feels like, well, I just got the physical, my advanced like author copy, I guess, like a month ago. After I submitted it, there was still like edits back and forth, and there was, you know, formatting stuff. So it feels soon. I mean, I know that like it'll take books like 2 or 3 years to get published. I think that my publisher specifically wanted to, you know, release it for fall. I wanted it out in October because October is like, you know, witchy, witchy month, and my favorite month. Mm-hmm.
When's your birthday?
November.
Oh, okay.
November 9th.
Oh, cool.
So basically Scorpio season is my favorite time, even though it lays me on my ass every time it happens, pretty much. Every time I'm in Scorpio season, I'm like, why do I like this? But the second it ends. I guess it's like childbirth. It's like writing a book. It's like, you know, now that I like finish this one, like maybe I'll do another one. It's like, right. No, Bakara, like do not forget. Like,
yeah. That's like moms who are like, pregnant, baby, like the new baby. And they're like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're nuts.
you're nuts. You must be kind of nuts.
But you know, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah.
So yeah, shimmering, there's this shimmering, beautiful, nostalgic, idealized picture of your writing time, but now it's out in the world. So I love this because right now we're in this sort of liminal state where we don't know what the response is going to be to the book. It's like this like waiting period. So yeah. There's, you know, do you have any anticipation or kind of questions around that? Or do you feel just kind of like ready for whatever?
Well, I've sent it out. I've sent out advanced copies to probably like 20 people, and it's like trickling in now. So I've sent it to a lot of the makers of just like indie tarot decks who I really love. A few like tarot Instagram accounts, a few of like my clients. So to see people holding it and, you know, people are posting it on Instagram and saying stuff about it, and it's all very kind, but it's all people that I know and that I've sent this to. So I think I'm bracing myself to not take too much stock into how it gets birthed. Like, I feel like after that, it's not mine. And I've mm-hmm. seen my friends who are authors just spend so much time and energy, you know, angsting over someone being evil on the internet. And, you know, I feel like it's happened to me enough times that I just know now that like people love to be evil on the internet. And at the end of the day, you're being evil on the internet, and I run two businesses and am a published author. So you can, you know, you can take it or leave it. Like, it doesn't have to be for you.
Yeah. I feel like that's such a healthy attitude to have, because it helps you just like keep going.
Yeah.
You don't get like sucked in a vortex and lose your shit.
Well, there was someone who said to me, I think when it was around the time that EM was opening, and they're like, there's two ways to have the tallest tower. It's to build yours up, or it's to tear other people's down. And it's just not the, you know, that's not the kind of person I want to be. Like, I don't want to fixate on that. I don't want to give people permission to do that. But that was also, I've been wrecked. Like, I have been completely eviscerated by like internet hate in the past. Like, just not okay for like days and weeks. It's a skin that you develop. And I have a lot of friends who are business owners who I've talked to about this. And, you know, probably the best advice I've gotten was from a friend of mine who owns a business in New York. And she's like, you know, when this kind of stuff happens, it hurts me. It hurts my feelings. Like, it hurts me as a person, but it doesn't hurt my business. So it's like, you know, if it's not hurting my business, then how much time do I really have to like think about it? You know?
No, none.
None. But with that said, I hope people love it. I think that so the way that I broke it out is, with the Major Arcana specifically, it's a little bit about what that card is, but it's also a personal anecdote of like experiencing the energy of that archetype, which I think in my experience has been the most useful way of understanding these cards, is identifying moments in our own lives where we've felt, you know, the like sun.
Embodied it.
Yeah, where mm-hmm. we've embodied it or been in a situation where it's been present. Yeah.
Do you want to read us one?
Sure.
All right, yeah.
Just like one of the anecdotes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see.
I would like to hear how you did that.
Totally. Let's see what the heck did I write for this stuff? probably just the Fool, because let's
start with the beginning.
It's the first one. Okay. The anecdote for the Fool. Quitting my job wasn't what grown-ups would call a good idea. I'd been working for a little over a year and got a promotion a few months before I received my tarot deck. I had a sure thing, a steady paycheck, coworkers I loved, a boss I respected, health insurance, and the emotional security essential to an early 20s recent grad who was totally freaked out about whether or not I could ever successfully adult. When I gave my 2 weeks' notice, I had $200 in my bank account and absolutely zero idea of what came next. But I had to jump. It wasn't an option. In all honesty, it took about an hour of owning a tarot deck to know that this would take me in new and unexpected directions, that the job I worked so hard to get instantly became a dream belonging to some former version of me. It was the craziest thing I've ever done and the best decision I've ever made.
Nice. So that feeling of like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know I gotta do it.
No, I gotta do it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way I'm not gonna do it.
Right.
Maybe it's a good idea, maybe it's a bad idea, but I need to.
Either way, you need to go through that portal.
I need to figure it out. And I did. And I think that it, you know, the Fool is obviously the beginning of everything. And it can be informed by the cards around it if it's a good or bad idea to jump. But I've definitely found that, you know, the more you do jump, the easier it becomes to just keep jumping.
Mm, right. Mm-hmm. You don't get so precious about it.
Yeah. And you also, you know, I think it's kind of, I physically feel like my brain chemistry has been rewired on a cellular level, like to think that the game is rigged in my favor rather than against me. Because if you do something, if you take these risks and these leaps of faith over and over again, and you keep being met by the universe, it's just like, I now assume that things are just going to go well if I act from that place of you know, faith and authenticity. So it's probably the most idealistic thing I've ever spoken aloud. I definitely, definitely feel that.
You know, that, and that's a journey, because did you always feel that
way? No, no, no.
Yeah.
Fuck no.
And like, what, you know, what kind of practices helped you get there? Because I have a very similar experience, mm-hmm. of not always feeling that way, but now I'm like, yeah. Like,
yeah,
and I'm happy, and I'm like, yeah, things are gonna work, or work a bit better than I imagined.
I mean, I think that there are like smaller examples of it, but I think the thing that really did it and solidified it for me was just scaring the shit out of myself over and over and over again. Like, it
was
needed
that 2016?
To be that. Yeah, it was 2016. It was like 2013 to 2016, I guess. I think it started with reading tarot, and the idea of reading tarot at all scared me a lot because, you know, the who the fuck do I think I am came in really hard. Then quitting my job scared me a lot. And then leaving New York scared me a lot. Even like the success of reading tarot scared me a lot. Opening EM scared me a lot. Writing the book scared me a lot. But it's less scary. It's just less scary every time. It's just like, oh, this is just the, you know, this is just what my life looks like now.
This is what you do.
This is what I do. I just take these, I take these crazy leaps. I mean, I think it's like it's a phrase for people in recovery that, you know, people with addiction need to live extraordinary lives if they want to live at all. Mm. But I feel that for healers, I feel it for artists, I feel it for makers, where it's just like, you know, there's easier lives available to us.
But are they easy?
Maybe. I mean, I definitely think about it sometimes of like, you know, the 9-to-5 and the 401k and the structure and the paid vacation. But what I just really can't stand is like, you know, if you're going to do this, if you're going to get into this hustle and get into this mix and, you know, be creative or be a healer or be a, you know, artist, no one owes you anything. Like no one's going to give you anything. And so you have to be extraordinary about it, and you have to be, you know, self-motivated, and you have to be better than you think you're capable of being just on a daily basis, kind of as a baseline. Because there's no one, if you complain, like, you're not complaining about your boss, you're like complaining about yourself. So
your own self. Yes.
So this is definitely the life that I choose. I would choose it every single day above anything else, with the exhaustion and the sacrifice and the sleep deprivation and the, you know, occasional accidental starvation, all of that. Like, I pick this 1,000%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So what about this? Tell us more about the structure of your book, because, you know, who is it for and how does it flow? Like, take us on that journey.
It's definitely not for the easily offended. And there's definitely some pop culture references, obviously, because I'm a millennial. But, you know, you can read it with it, you know, not being lost on, you know, even if it's lost on you, the meaning still translates. So the way I broke it out is just like starting with the, you know, who the fuck am I? And who the fuck are you? So like the introductions, what the fuck is tarot? What the fuck is magic? And then like all the things, like basically everything that I've ever figured out.
We're keep reading them there.
Okay. What the fuck is tarot? What the fuck is magic? How the fuck do I choose a deck? The major arcana, the minor arcana, the court cards, what the fuck are tarot spreads? How the fuck do I give a reading? tarot FAQ for noobs, the shitty cards, dealing with assholes, boundary setting and energetic protection, And then there's a section at the end of just different kinds of energetic practices and other forms of magic that I've found to be essential to my tarot practice. So chakra, the chakra system, crystals, meditation, altar building, journaling, and space clearing is also in there. So, I mean, the tarot is a really daunting thing. It's 78 cards. It's like structured out in all these like crazy ways. So the major, it's like broken out into the major arcana, which is the 22 cards, the Fool to the World. And the journey of that just broken down as simple as I could. And so far as like, here's what it means, here's what it's meant for me, and here's what it means when it shows up in a reading. And then the court card or the minor arcana is a little bit shorter, but just like kind of with funny. So the Ace of Wands is, it's lit. Four of Wands is work hard, play hard. Six of Wands is obviously a Michelle Obama reference. When they go low, we go high. Had to shout out my girl at some point. And then the court cards are broken out into families and just considering like what these families would like be like and how they would interact together. So this is probably my favorite part, was just like kind of coming up with names for each one. So the Daughter of Wands is the Spitfire, the Son of Wands is the fuckboy, the Mother of Wands is the Real Housewife, and the Father of Wands is the Mogul. And so kind of piecing those together was really fun for me.
Oh my God, I cannot wait to read these. That is so funny. That is so funny. And so, and then tell me about the drawings. Did you have, because you've got pictures of the cards. You have pictures of every card.
We have pictures of every major arcana card, and we have pictures of some of the minor arcana cards.
And so, then are they a deck, or are they just your illustrator drew them?
They are a deck. So my illustrator is a fabulous woman and one of my best friends. Her name is Autumn Whitehurst. I met her in Brooklyn, and she is, she's just amazing. I mean, she's so good at what she does. She's been doing it for a long time. I couldn't believe she agreed to do this. I couldn't believe she agreed to design a tarot deck with me, but we are designing a deck together. Cool. So these were kind of the preliminary sketches. And it was nice because we had already like mapped out the concepts so it could kind of just fit in here. So eventually What the Fuck is Tarot can also serve as a guidebook to the specific deck we're making, but it's also, it can apply to any deck as well.
Nice. So let's get into the, what are the shitty cards?
The shitty cards.
Because I think a lot of people get really fixated and obsessed and pull cards again and again and again to try to get another answer. So can you reveal some more about that?
Yeah. So I think that, I mean, what I tell people about the shitty cards, and I can read some of what's in here too.
What are the shitty cards too?
The shitty card, I mean, the most famous shitty cards are probably Death, the Devil, the Tower. Those are the difficult major arcana ones. But there's also the Three of Swords, which is, you know, heartbreak or betrayal. There's the Ten of Swords, which is just like having murdered yourself to death with your thoughts. There's a pretty fair distribution of light and dark throughout the tarot. So, you know, the first thing that people say to me when I tell them I read, or often what I hear first is, well, I don't want to know if anything bad is going to happen.
Wow.
Which is totally fair. I mean, no one wants to know if something bad is going to happen. So that what I've found is like none of the readings that I've given in the way that I work with the tarot, like nothing is predicted impending doom. But we all have a combination of light and dark in any situation that we're in this moment. And so what the tarot is going to do is it's going to identify where those are. They're there regardless. If someone is lying to you, they're lying to you regardless of whether the tarot shows it or not. I guess the first thing I wrote about it is one of the main reasons the tarot is such an accurate divinatory tool is because of the balance of light and dark in the cards. There are angel and oracle decks that are pretty much all love and light, wonder, healing, and the like. Vomit. That is not the tarot, nor is it a way to get an honest depiction of someone's circumstances. We all have darkness. We may suppress it or hide it or not know how to carry it. It may be foreign to us. It may dominate us. We may have reconciled it and know how to harness it. But no one is without their shadow. To the contrary, the amount of light we emit is in direct proportion to the size of that shadow. That is a beautiful fucking thing. In our shadow resides our femininity, receptivity, seduction, flow, intuition, sexuality, and a large portion of our power. To deny this part of ourselves is to neuter some of our best qualities. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, I mean, fear of the shitty car is just so, like, whack to me at this point. It's like, what do you think? Yeah. Like, your life is perfect and it's going to be perfect forever? Like, yeah. Nope.
It reminds me of just, like, people's fear of their shadow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of fear of your unconscious desires and what's taboo and what's wrong, you know. What's quote wrong. My friend and I have a meme we like to laugh about and quote back and forth to each other all the time. I think it's got Miss Piggy in it, and it's like, love and light, money and dicks. And it's like, yeah, you gotta, like, come on, bring it all. Like, if you just bring the love and light, you're missing out on what makes it the love and light. Let's get with it.
So, yeah. I think that there's been a long time, like a long held belief that to be immersed in spirituality is like inherently in denial of like humanity, where it's like, I and like, this is how I felt.
To, like, get out of your body.
Yeah. To get out of your body, yeah. to transcend, to elevate. Yeah.
Become a spirit.
Yeah. And I think that when I first got my deck, that was what I was so intimidated by, was like, you know, seeing these healers who were so, you know, like love and light and like high vibration and felt largely just completely inaccessible to me. So I think that, it's important for me specifically to convey that message where, like, you can have this, you can have a meaningful relationship with the divine, you can sharpen your intuition, you can do all these things, and you can still, you know, drink a lot of fucking whiskey and, like, swear. And it's, like, they're not in opposition of each other, or at least they don't have to be.
Mm, yeah, definitely. I've kind of had... God, there's so many taboo things. Like, every fucking thing is taboo right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like to be this is taboo, to be that is taboo. And one thing I like to return to as often as I can is the idea that no matter what, you are not disconnected from the divine. Like, that is, like, you can be the richest person in the world, or the poorest person in the world, or the worst, or the best, or whatever, or, like, the most pure vegan, or the, like, most dirty factory farm meat eater. You are still made of the divine and the earth. And, like, that's, I feel like that's this real talk. Like, what does that mean? And what is that? How does that inform how we kind of approach all these different things now?
Well, what a revolutionary fucking concept that would be. Like, if we actually subscribe to that, like, in the bigger sense, where it's like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, like, a vegan or, like, a yoga practitioner. It doesn't matter if you're a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew or an atheist. Like,
or no, fat or skinny, yeah, or tall, like, or short.
Regardless, like, you are still comprised completely of the divine. And I think that that's, like, probably my favorite moment in readings, is, like, where people get a spark of recognition of that, where it's like, wait, maybe I am, like, and it's just like everything, like the way that they look changes, the way that they feel changes. It's like the moment that I realized I could read tarot felt like Harry getting his wand in Mr. Ollivander's shop, where it's like, oh my God, I can do this. And I changed, like, profoundly and fundamentally as a result. So I think that, you know, keeping tools like this that have such powerful transformative properties, like, shrouded in esotericism or, you know, exclusive to a specific community, is the dumbest shit I've ever heard. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So maybe we should just, like, stop. Like, I had, like, someone come up to me. I was teaching a class, and someone came up to me, is like, you know, like, it's just kind of weird that you're, like, teaching this class, because, like, you're talking about, like, how you don't really, like, live, like, a necessarily, like, healthy lifestyle, and, like, you're using, like, a lot of, like, profanity and, like,
all
this stuff.
Are you impure?
And I was like, I was just like, I don't fucking know, like, what you want me to tell you. Like, if you want to go, like, there's so many other, like, options for, like, the kind of thing that you're looking for. Like, I made no, you know, promises that it was going to be like that. Like,
yeah.
In any way that I broadcast myself. So
on your flyers, you got to say, hey, I pooped.
Yeah. Just, like, use, like, you know, like, a pack of cigarettes and a bottle of whiskey as, like, the background for, like, all my flyers, just to create that, like, nice contrast. I'm like, as I'm talking about it now, I'm just, like, realizing, like, how sick of it I am. And I think people are sick of it too.
I'm sick of it. My listeners are sick of it. It's just, I know that I joke a lot with my friends about this shit, because we just, it's funny. It's when you get to a certain point, it's like, this is just funny that this even exists, that people think they can be so fucking pure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's cool. Like, if you want to be pure, go for it, but not me.
Yeah.
Like, I am not pure.
Yeah. And I think we have to get to that point. And I I'm not completely there by any means of just, but just being like, if it's well with my soul, then it's like all good. Yeah. Like it's, you know, I really think that like I've done the work that I've needed to do at this point in time to trust myself and to know that, you know, really all that ultimately matters is if something sits well with me. So it was nice kind of getting this book back and after having some space and reading it again and feeling that I did, like, my integrity is in here. My heart and, like, my truth is in here. But, like, my humor is also in here. My personality is in here. And my sass is in here. It's probably, like, the most, like, I feel like I'm just, like, handing, like, a paper version of me to, like,
people
someone.
People want it, too. I mean, yeah. I have people loved your interviews. They loved the private Q&A we did in the group. They're like, oh, my God, I love Akara. And, like, I think it's part because of that. That just like freshness of like real talk. So I think they'll be excited to get a piece of you.
That's so relaxing. That's so relaxing to hear that. I hope that, you know, I just can't do anything else. Like I remember, oh my God, this is so stupid. I'm such an idiot. We were with, I was just with, my boyfriend's parents, like, I think it was like a couple months ago now. But we were going to dinner and I really wanted to like, you know, be like on point for it. And so
to like impress the parents.
Yeah. I just wanted to be like impressive and I wanted to be, you know, you just want people to like you.
Right.
Like,
of course.
Like me. So I was like, I figured out like my outfit and all stuff and, you know, my tattoos were covered up and like whatever. And I was talking to a friend of mine. She's like, just don't like swear. Just like try not to like swear so much. I'm just like, yeah, totally. And like, I would like, there's like five times during dinner where I'm like, oh yeah, that's like bullshit. I'm like, oh fuck, sorry, damn, like just like fuck, like just can't even when it counts, like I can't do it. So I just kind of need to learn how to settle into the glorious shit show that is myself and learn to be okay with it. So when other people appreciate it, it's deeply, deeply validating.
Uh-huh. Definitely. So now you've got this book, you got your shop. Are you gonna like chill out? What does that mean? What does that look like for you? What's next?
Yeah, totally. That's such a good question. So the deck is next. Right now I'm doing some of like the hustle. I'm just reaching out to shops and I'm reaching out to potential vendors and stuff like that just to find, you know, the right homes for the book. And then the deck is going to come out probably in the like late spring, like early summer. And I think from there, I'm going to kind of look at all these different pieces. I'm going to look at the store. I'm going to look at just me as a tarot reader. I'm going to look at the book, look at the deck, and just leave it open for what gets created out of that. I think that's never steered me wrong in the past. I think to say that I know where I'll be a year and a half from now is
no clue.
Well, I know it's bullshit as I'm saying it, so I'm not gonna say it. But I think the being professionally motivated or having something that I need to do or need to accomplish is it's not really my driving force anymore. I want to be happy. I want to be surrounded by love. I want to be, you know, around my people. I want my dog to have a good life. I want to have a good life. Maybe I'll learn to cook. Like maybe that'll be the next thing I do. Maybe I'll figure out how to feed myself.
Do you know how to make a smoothie at least? Like,
I definitely do. I just don't do it.
Just
like,
don't do it.
If anyone has any tips for me about like the physical aversion that I feel to all things feeding myself, I would like love to. Maybe it's like a throat chakra thing or like a root chakra, but like, I hate grocery stores. I hate dishes. I hate my kitchen. I hate refrigerators and like stuff that stays in there. Like everything about it, I feel just repelled by. And I see my friends like,
but
come
you
home
like food.
I love food.
Yeah,
I love food. Totally, totally love food.
It's I think just, it sounds like you need a personal chef.
Oh God, from your mouth to God's ears.
Where are you at, personal chef? You'll get paid in crystals.
I know. We'll literally trade for crystals. Yeah, that's like one of the simple things I could do to make my life easier. Maybe that's what 2018 will be, just doing simple things to make my life easier.
Back to basics.
Back to basics. Yeah, I definitely need to get back to basics.
Yeah, that's kind of a theme, I think. Cool. So, you know, just to kind of wrap it up, I'm just curious for, I'm kind of stepping back in our conversation, but what the fuck is it like to be at those crystal shows just surrounded by more crystals than you've ever seen in your life?
Oh, I definitely go into like a dissociative state. Like, it's like where my trauma really comes in handy. I feel like I'm just like, I'm just not gonna, because I went, so I was just in Denver, which is the second largest gem show in the US. And I went with my friend Sam, who lives in Denver. So he met me there and drove me around and stuff. But he was like, when someone goes to a gem show for the first time, it's like you're seeing crystals that are like two times taller than you. Like you're seeing geodes that you can like literally go inside of and take a nap.
Like build your house out of them.
Totally. Like you're seeing, you know, just like the most exquisite specimens from all over the world. Wow. And I think that.
Who buys them? Those
Museums, okay. Like hotels, like big, like retail, you know, like people definitely do buy them. I'm not sure. I mean, it's kind of like a logistical nightmare to just be like shipping thousands of pounds of like rocks, like all over the country and the world. Crazy. So those people are definitely like badasses. Like, cause it's like, there's nothing heavier that you can ship.
Than a geode you can sleep in.
Than like a bunch of rocks. So I've been to probably like 10 gem shows now, and you can just, I can get a feel for it. Like, I know what we need for the shop. Mm-hmm. I can pretty much tell by looking at a tent if someone's going to negotiate with me or not. I can pretty much tell by how the tent is set up if like the prices are going to like, you know, match what I'm capable of doing. So it just becomes, I think it's my happy place. Like it's because you're just wandering around like, basically like the desert or like a big lot with a bunch of tents and just like, so I get to haggle and I get to like, you know, meet people from across the world and I get to pick out crystals and I get to, you know that it's like something that people back home in Dharma are really excited about, like when new stuff comes in. So I think it's just like my natural state. I think I was like born to be at gem shows.
Oh my God. Awesome. Wow. Oh my God. I just had an idea. Like what about people who could, I could see this happening. They buy one of those geodes you can like fit in and then they offer it as like a birthing portal and like people birth their babies into a geode.
Oh, I've definitely, every single time I see it, I'm like, I could bring this into EM. We have high ceilings.
Yeah.
Like I'm just like, I don't know how I would like ever pay it off. It's like 25 grand. I'm like, maybe I just like charge people like $1 a minute to like sit inside of it or something. But yes. One day I'm going to have something like ridiculous. I'm just going to have like a shower, like tiled with like lapis or, you know, it's coming. It's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am extra and I love crystals. And I feel like that's just the natural next step for me.
I'm stoked. Cool. So by the time this comes out, when all y'all will be listening with your ears, I believe What the Fuck is Tarot? WTF. Is it officially WTF?
I say What the Fuck is Tarot, okay. But.
It'll be out. The book will be out, just freshly birthed. So you can go check it out. Where can people buy it? And how can they find out more about you and Everyday Magic? And
yes.
The book.
Everything. Yes. Okay. So things. We are selling What the Fuck is Tarot directly through shopeverydaymagic.com. So double whammy of being like a vendor like and the author. So definitely buy it from us. We can, you know, I'll be packing them up. So if you want it like signed or anything, you can leave a note in like the order of, you know, what you want in it. You can also get it on Amazon. If you're feeling heartless, you can get it at barnesandnoble.com. I believe it'll be available. Like Google, it's available like via Google Books. And yeah, so the hashtag on Instagram is WTF is tarot. There's already some kind of trickling in, and I do aggressively stalk the hashtag, so I will, you know, interact with you via the internet if you post about it. But yeah, even if you just type in WTF is tarot into Google, it'll show up. So that's cool. A thing.
Mm-hmm. And then Instagram, people can check you out and check out Everyday Magic. What are your names?
Yeah, so my personal Instagram is BakaraW. My website is also freshly relaunched. It's BakaraW, so you can book readings through there. And then Everyday Magic's Instagram is everyday2_magic.
Sweet. Durham, North Carolina, putting it on the map. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
Yeah, this was great. Thanks.
Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you'll go check out Bakara's new book and make sure you go head over to dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret to get the secret episode where we talk about whether or not it's okay for you to totally disconnect and cut off communication from your birth family. And I know that some of you listening will probably really resonate with this because we aren't always born into the most amazing families. And so people who really have survived trauma and abuse face the lifelong question of how to be in relationship with that. And we discuss that in the secret episode. So dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret, and I'll see you over there. Hey, everybody. I want to take a quick break and chat with Laura Lee about some healing work she did with Rebecca Conran, who has been a guest on the show in episodes 38 and episode 78, and who also does our energy reports. And so I just wanted to check in with Laura Lee real quick and ask her a couple questions about her experiences working with Rebecca. Hi, Laura Lee.
Hi, Natalie.
So what prompted you to seek help from Rebecca? What were you thinking and feeling?
Well, originally I was feeling depleted from working with many clients as a body worker and energy healer myself, and reached out to Rebecca for support, to support me in my own healing and also to support me in how I was supporting others. And I think we all have blind spots, no matter who it is. And it's very important as a practitioner to receive regular, ongoing work from others.
Right. Yeah. How are you going to be able to give your best work if you're not getting the support you need to be clear and whole and aligned and just have your cup full?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what was your experience like working with Rebecca? How does it feel to actually be there with her? Or actually, do you do it in person or do you talk over Skype?
Well, I have worked with Rebecca in person, but I've also worked with her perhaps more so remotely on the phone. And I find it to be equally as powerful and no different than in person. Rebecca really is incredibly kind and compassionate, and her energy work is very, very strong. She's incredibly intuitive, one of the most intuitive healers that I know. And so I feel that that really helps me to be able to cut through the noise to what is most important in that moment, in the session. Rebecca's also extremely committed to her own healing journey and hasn't been afraid to share that with me or with others. And I really respect that about her.
Yeah. And I love that it's no different in person or on Skype. And you're someone who's had both experiences, so you can speak to that really well. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like sometimes people have this idea that if it's not in person, it's not as powerful. And I just simply don't think that's true. That hasn't been my experience at all.
Same here.
Yeah.
Skype is awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Or phone, whatever.
Yeah.
And so what kind of experiences or transformations has your supporting healing work from Rebecca helped you to have in your life?
Well, it's helped me with my energy levels, and it's helped me refine my practice further, both my personal spiritual practice and the practices that I do for myself every day, but also the practices of how I'm working with others. Like maybe I'm working a little bit differently with people, doing certain things before and after the sessions. It's helped me in being able to just hold more energy and do more and more energy work with people, because I've been in a transition of moving away from body work and doing more energy healing work. And so she's really been helping me with that transition, which I appreciate so much.
That sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Laura Lee, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you very much, Natalie.
And for listeners, if you are curious about learning more about Rebecca, you can listen to episode 38, episode 78, or to any of our energy reports, as Rebecca does our monthly astro energy reports on Dream Freedom Beauty. And you can also check out Rebecca and the services that she offers at RebeccaConran.com and on Instagram at RebeccaConran.com.